extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Hi, welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne Maria DeMars.
And joining us today, we have two amazing guests.
Hi, I'm Juliana Nessi. I'm a UC President's postdoc at UC Berkeley.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Lise Reyes. I'm a UCR alumnus, and I work at Guardian Princesses and Palomar College.
And we're going to talk to them today. They are co-authors as well of Princess Leilani and the Lanu Tree, a new book coming out about the Guardian Princesses. And we're going to talk first, let's tell people a little bit, what is the Guardian Princess Alliance? And then we will go from there.
All right, so the Guardian Princesses is an organization that creates and publishes children's books and other media that advocate for cultural diversity and environmental awareness. We have children's book series out that each book features a strong and independent princess character who is also a superheroine and the hero of her own story.
And we really talked about how you guys are looking to change princess culture, because I'm sure that's really, really, really easy, right?
So really, this is an alternative story to what we have now of the princess in distress or princess waiting for Prince Charming. I think our hope for these alternative stories is to have other narratives about women and what they can do besides waiting around for someone to rescue them. We wanted girls and women around the world to understand who they are and to build self-esteem, mm-hmm. as well as to empower women to do other things other than, you know, depending on this idea of savior complex.
That's one of the things I loved so much about your whole organization, that idea of rescue yourself. You know, I've worked as a coach for many years with a lot of young women athletes. I've worked as an employer for many years with women in the workplace. And it drives me crazy when someone is complaining about either a work situation or a coaching situation. And they say later, well, nobody helped me, or why didn't you help me? And I say, well, you're a grown woman. Why didn't you go to that person and say, look, I deserve a raise, or I'm not going to put up with this, or leave that situation? Why were you waiting for somebody to come along and rescue you? And I almost think that those messages start very, very early and are pervasive.
Yes, I agree. The fact that our books are children's books, I think that's great, because the stories that we grow up with end up shaping kind of how we think, who we are. With our children's books, we're trying to tell children now that you're not defined by finding someone who will save you. You are defined by how you rescue yourself, how you are able to do that, how you're able to do whatever you want.
And we're on kind of a similar vein with, like you said, math and now social studies and language arts, but our game started out with math. And remember years ago, a student said to me, is it true that all Asian people are good at math? And I said, yeah, a billion some people in the world, sure, yeah, they're all just alike. And he said, yeah, I heard that all Asian people are scary smart at math. And this kid is Latino. And I said, you know, I run a company and I write software, and so do a lot of our software developers. And that's one of the things about our games is we have in several of them Native American characters who are solving all the problems. And a lot of them are math problems. How much do you need to bring back of this medicine to save your tribe? And then Aztec Games, our one coming out later next year, is Latino characters solving math problems. Because I think you're absolutely right. It's important to see people like you doing things that are not stereotypical, whether it's solving math problems or writing software. It's important.
Yeah, and we're talking also about the importance of diversity in your characters. So not just can they, you know, girls can do anything, but really a bunch of different faces, you know, different cultures. They aren't all, you know, a size 4-inch waist. How important is that, and why has that been a focus of what you guys are doing?
The parts that I think are stories try to promote is really a healthy self-esteem around diversity, around cooperation, around caring for people, nature and knowledge production. You know, I mean, this is also about sharing knowledge with each other and sharing a collective story that is not often shared in children's literature. I mean, really, this idea of Guardian Princess also came out of a need for a diversifying of children's literature.
And with our new story, Princess Leilani, who is now the fifth Guardian Princess in our series, she's a size 14. She is not a size 2 hourglass princess. So with her as a princess, as size 14, and again, that's not what her story is about. It's not about her dealing with the fact that she's this size. That's just who she is. She's doing her own thing, and she just happens to have that size.
It's not one size fits all.
Exactly.
Well, and we always want to kind of get personal as well. But, you know, growing up, do you remember seeing yourselves in anything you ever read? And how did that impact you when you came into this project?
Yeah, I'm Filipino. Yeah, I've never seen, like, I grew up with Disney. Disney is close to my heart because it was part of my childhood. But yes, I didn't really see myself in a good amount of the characters. And also, so the fact that I don't really see myself portrayed, like my figure or how my complexion or anything in some of the stories, it kind of made me feel lost sometimes. Oh, and I feel like it's important to see yourself in stories, because again, it just shows that, it just helps you know that you are not alone, that you are not isolated, wondering if anybody will understand you.
Maybe your kids are already back in school. They're easing their way back into homework again and it hits you. Or maybe you're gearing up for the start of a new school year when suddenly you're struck with the realization. The entire summer passed and your kids didn't do any math. Between camp and the beach and pool, fractions, multiplication, and division just didn't seem to factor in. Wait, factors? That's a math thing too, right? Don't worry. We've got the perfect way to ease back into math and review what your kids seem to have forgotten over the summer. Seven Generation Games, games that teach math and social studies in a fun gaming environment. Just go to 7generationgames.com/buy to get them today.
This is Jose Braulio Gonzalez, social studies teacher, Converse Middle School. We're here with More Than Ordinary. And one of the philosophies that I love to live by is Carpe Diem.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, brought to you by Seven Generation Games. I'm still Anne Maria DeMars.
And I'm still Maria Burns-Ortiz, and still with us here, we have the co-authors of Leilani and the Lanu Tree.
Jeannie Lise Reyes.
And Julianne Anessi.
And so we talked a little bit about, you know, Guardian Princes Alliance, what they do. How did you guys get involved with them?
I got involved with Guardian Princes as something that I've always enjoyed doing, is creative writing. And so when Setsu Shigematsu, who's the founder of Guardian Princes Alliance, approached me about getting involved with the organization, I was excited because great creative writing is something that I loved. But, you know, working in another space of academic writing, I mean, that's something that it's hard to always bridge. So
as somebody, we just had to write a couple of academic papers, and I come from a writing background, and they are the two most polar opposite worlds.
But I enjoy doing both. But creative writing is something that I love. I love sort of expressing your ideas and kind of thoughts in a way that others can read and interpret in various ways. So that's how I got involved with Guardian Princes. I got involved about 4 years ago and have been a co-author since. We've had some changeover in staff and writers, and I think it's finally here, Princess Leilani, mm-hmm. and we look forward to it coming out later this fall. And
as somebody who's written a book, is it at the printers? Or almost, because you said almost, so that's one of those words, like, you know, it seems like it's 99% done, and then 99.9% done, and that it just keeps going on. So how?
We are very close. We are almost at the printers. Our printing staff is on our tails.
At that point, you'll be able to breathe. You'll say, oh.
Yeah, so I first got involved with Guardian Princesses about 2 years ago. I was a student at UC Riverside, and I started out as an intern. I went to a workshop run by Setsu Shigematsu, the founder. And I loved it.
Okay, you loved it, but here's the hot question. Did you get paid? Do you get paid as an intern?
For me, no, I did not get paid. Nowadays, the internship program, they offer credit, or it's an option for students if they want to do credit or non.
Okay, so let's talk about paid internships versus non-paid internships and what you get out of it. Because here at Seven Generation Games, we have internships, but we pay all of our interns, because our feeling is that, as Maria has said, that there's a certain group of people that can afford to be interns and get that experience, and we're a company about diversity, and so we try to give people the opportunity to get that experience while being paid. And then when you get credit, not only are you not getting paid, but then you're paying them for you to work there. So what made that worth it to you? What did you get out of it if it wasn't cold hard cash?
One thing I got out of it was experience, because at that point in my life, I just really wanted to find an opportunity to get that experience. But the main thing that drew me to really commit to Guardian Princesses and to be a part of this organization was just what they did, what they stood for. Again, I was one of my majors was creative writing. Like Julianne said, it's a passion of mine. I love writing. I loved especially children's books and young adult books. That's something I want to do as a career, hopefully one day.
Well, and we're talking about, you know, it seems, especially from the first segment we were talking before, you know, we started recording, and it seems like it's something that's really a passion of yours, just the social impact mission, obviously the writing part, all of those things, and how important, you know, it's almost something that you would maybe have volunteered to do regardless, as opposed to, say, filing papers for an investment banking firm for no cash, you know, and I think that's kind of a difference when we talk about what do you get out of it, but yes. Also how much do you believe in it, you know?
I was an outreach intern, but then Setsu and the organization, they also let out our creative side and do what we want, because again, it's stories. That's our core, is these children's stories about these very strong and independent princesses. Me and other interns, we drew fan art, like because I also love cartooning, so I drew fan art comics. We wrote songs. We had a lot of fun, and then they allowed us to do that. They loved seeing our love and passion for these stories, and that really drove us to work hard and just to help Guardian Princesses bloom.
For me, I think a lot of my own personal research also sort of tied into these same issues that we're talking about here in the Prince's Guardianship, in terms of environmental justice and consciousness, social justice around issues of gender dynamics, around race, representations, around class, sexuality. So there's so many overlaps with what I, you know, interested in professionally, but also personally as a Pacific Islander. And I think this is a very important platform to share those issues and also to educate. I think a lot of this conversation is an opening of a dialogue for, you know, from various communities to have a dialogue about these issues, but not just issues, but also to celebrate the beauty of these cultures and people's various aspects of their personalities and histories. So.
And you guys talked about it being, this book from conception to now, was it a four-year process? Or was it, you know, talked about it being shelved. I mean, how much commitment did it take for this just to get done?
So I think 4 years ago, Princess Leilani was on not the chopping block, but, you know, on stage. And we wanted to talk about a Pacific Islander princess that represented sort of those communities. And so one of our struggles around that time was talking about, I mean, the Pacific is a huge place, you know, there's thousands of cultures and thousands of islands. And so, you know, I think we settled on using Pacific Island words as well as sort of ideas and themes that we can generalize across the Pacific. And so I think coming from, you know, as a Samoan, I felt more comfortable speaking from that platform, you know, culture and talking about life and representations.
And I can totally relate to that, because we have several games that focus on Native American characters. And of course, there's hundreds of different tribes. And we have a game coming out that's focused on Latino history. And again, you're talking about everybody from Guatemala to Mexico to, you know, all these different countries, to the kid living in the U.S. today. And how do you try and cover all those groups? And we kind of did what you did, where I think in each game we focus on maybe one population, but then they meet kids from Honduras, or they meet kids who are Dakota in the game on Ojibwe. But yeah, it's a tough thing to take a group that's really broad that people may be generalized to, but it's not. It's like talk about Asians, you know?
Absolutely. And I think there's a social responsibility there in these representations. Even though these are fictionalized children's stories, I think there's a responsibility to socially to represent these various communities. And you know, you can't always please everyone. I think that was something that we...
You'll never be able to please everyone.
But I think it's a start to a conversation that hopefully is ongoing.
And for everybody who's now listening, thinking, oh my goodness, this sounds like such a cool idea, and wondering where you can get Princess Leilani and the Lanu Tree, as well as other Guardian Princess books, you can go to guardianprincesses.com, or you can check them out on Twitter at GPGeneration1. That's guardianprincesses.com or Twitter at GPGeneration1. And it's time for the More Than Ordinary shout-outs. Thanks so much to Haley from Canada for being more than ordinary and donating a game.
And what's up with all the game donations coming from out of the country? Canada this week, Australia last week. Hey, some of you Americans, get in here and donate some games. Help out kids in schools in your community. So, it's time for my story question. I've got into those in the last two podcasts. So a story question is a question where you tell a story and then you ask somebody something at the end and let them talk.
If you've ever been to a conference and they have the Q&A time, you know what a story question is.
So a few years ago, I was in Washington, D.C. with my partner, Dr. Eric Longy. We had just hit $1 million in our company, Spirit Light Consulting, which Seven Generation Games grew out of. And Eric said to me, if I went back to myself as a little boy on the reservation when I was 10 years old, living in a log cabin, and said, when you're 50, you're going to have a doctorate, and you're going to be in Washington, D.C., at Union Station with your partner, your company will hit $1 million, you'll be getting ready to go up and meet with your congressional representative for a photo op. He said, there's no way I would have believed it. So you, Julianne, have become kind of a journey like that. You were living in Samoa as an 8-year-old girl, and now here you are, you know, a published author, postdoc, University of California, Berkeley. How has that journey been for you? How did you get from point A to point B? And what would you say to other little girls in that situation?
Well, definitely that journey took a while to get to. But I think what I want to stress to other young people is that nothing is impossible. I think it's hard. There's a lot of sacrifices in terms of accomplishing your goals. But you have to do what you enjoy. You have to think about what makes you happy, what you're passionate about, what you define as success. What is successful to you? For me, it was sort of this pursuit of knowledge and sort of the sharing of knowledge. It was about highlighting and representing, you know, indigenous ways of life, talking about Pacific Island cultures. If you're passionate about a topic, or if you're passionate about a community, if you're passionate about an issue, then you can continue to work towards those goals. It may not be hard. It may be hard. It may not be easy. There's a lot of sacrifices along the way. But I also am an optimist that you will meet many great people along the way who will guide you in this journey.
And I think it is important to emphasize, too, what you said about it being harder for some people. Like Diana, our wonderful office manager who was just in here, mentioned that she went to a high school in South Los Angeles, and they didn't even have books until the second semester of her AP chemistry class. And so even though you have those obstacles, you can still persevere and succeed. But that doesn't mean that you or I or anyone is trivializing those or pretending that it's not more difficult for those students. But they can do it. And yeah, it is just harder.
Absolutely. I mean, the obstacles as well as, you know, the idea of a level playing field is, you know, of course, is a myth with a lot of students of colors who, especially within the education realm, who are trying to go to school or even just pay to take a class or pay for tuition. Obstacles are a lot harder. And I think we have to recognize that and acknowledge the inequities within our various educational institutions, especially here in the U.S. But it also doesn't mean that should limit what you can do. You know, at the end of the day, I think it really is a personal choice to accomplish your goals and to do what is right for you. And sometimes, you know, going to college or going to, you know, work for some company isn't your path. And maybe your journey is to work at a community college or to teach high school, which, you know, I have a background in teaching high school, and I love teaching high school, and I would definitely go back to teaching high school. So I think it really is about you knowing yourself and understanding what your purpose as well as what you can offer to others.
Well, Angie, tell us about your background, because I think that also played a role not only just in shaping you, obviously, but also it played a role in shaping the story.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So my family, we're a very unique family. My dad, I'm a military brat. My dad was in the military. So we experienced deployment. We experienced trying to be strong as a family, my mother, my mom, my brother, and myself. And my younger brother has autism, high-functioning autism. And it just kind of, we had to, you know, adjust how we were as a family. We didn't treat him any, like, special. We didn't baby him. We treated him like how anybody else wants to be treated, like a person, like, whom we loved.
Right. My cousin has a son with autism, and it's the same thing. They're always like going out biking and camping and just doing all kinds of way more stuff than I do. And yeah, they have not taken his autism as any excuse to constrain their lives in any way. And I really admire that.
It's great. I think that's how it should be. And that growing up alongside my brother, because we're so close, and one thing that really helped us become close was storytelling. We loved animated movies. We loved I loved reading. He loved drawing. We both loved drawing. We do comics. We do a lot of creative stuff. And upon growing up and reading more books to myself and to my brother Marco, that's his name, I realized that there aren't a lot of stories that I can really, really relate to because, yes, I'm a military brat. I have a brother who has autism. Marco doesn't see himself in a lot of stories either. And I feel like that's something that should be changed. And so as I kind of grew as a storyteller throughout college, that's when I realized, like, I have the power to tell my stories now. And again, for Leilani, Leilani has a younger brother. And I really delved into my personal bond with Marco, and I transferred that to Leilani and her little brother, Kea. And also, Leilani, we didn't really mention this, but she also has a disability. We gave her a disability, but again, that is not the core of her story. That is just part of who she is. That's one of her many layers. But after experiencing all of this and just writing my stories, what I would say to the listeners, to all of you guys, is that don't be afraid to share your story. No matter how different it is from what you see on TV, from what you see in books, it doesn't matter. What matters is your story. If you don't see yourself in stories, then write it, then draw it, then do it through whatever field that you want to do. Who knows? There will be people out there who will relate to it, even though you might not think that, oh, no one's going to understand this. No one's going to understand it. Trust me, it really makes a difference to know that there is someone out there who has a story that is similar to you. There's people out there that can be changed for the better because of your story. That's a great power.
And I think we want to leave you with that. Don't be afraid to share your story.